You're listening to the Marketplace Flash Briefing. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Everybody, I spent some time in Warren, Michigan earlier this week, 15, 20 miles north of Detroit. It's an industry town mostly, that industry being cars and more specifically General Motors. GM is the biggest, as measured by sales, of what used to be called Detroit's Big Three car makers, and it has promised to make 100% of its cars emissions-free by 2035, which explains how I wound up on Tuesday morning at GM's Global Technical Center in Warren. It's a huge campus. 25,000 people work there. The heart, really, of the research going into GM's electric vehicle offerings.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good.
Kai Rizdahl, nice to see you. How are you?
That's Mary Barra. She is the chair and CEO of GM.
And you're in our R&D building, which is one of our historic Saarinen design buildings. This year, well, you wouldn't be able to make anymore.
We were commenting on it on the way up here.
And then we got to it.
Well, it's great to be here. Thanks so much for making the trip to Warren.
And it was a trip. Warren's an interesting place. We drove in this morning, and I was thinking about how I was going to start our chat. And I was looking at the cars as I came in. Lots of, you know, almost all GMs. Not all of them, but almost. It occurred to me, though, that there was only one EV in the whole parking lot. And it's the one parked out front. It's your new Cadillac Lyriq. And I guess my question is, how do you get America into driving EVs when you don't, it looks like, have a lot of GM workers driving EVs yet?
Well, I think it's a great question, and it's coming. You know, this is kind of a breakthrough year for General Motors. You know, by the end of this year, we'll have 9 EVs available, you know, with the Bolt EV and EUV all the way to the Silverado EV that we launch in, you know, short order. We'll have a very affordable Chevrolet Equinox EV, a Blazer EV, and then also when we look at the Lyriq that's just ramping up. And so for General Motors, you know, we made the decision to do a dedicated platform, which we call Ultium. And so the Bolt is our second generation technology, but Ultium is our third generation. And this is the year we really ramp those up. So by the way, so I know there's a lot of our employees who want, in fact, I just came from a town hall where they were asking, how do I get more experience to understand, you know, how an EV changes my life? And that's the journey that we're on. So if you came here in a year, it would be much different.
So maybe we will. But look, you're discontinuing the Bolt and you've got all these cars planned. How many are coming out the door every year, right? I guess the question is, are enough coming out the door?
I wish I had more. So to your point, I absolutely wish I had more. You know, we'll make about 50,000 for North America by the end of end of this month.
Which is a single-digit percentage of your production, right?
Exactly. But we will then virtually double that in the second half of the year. And we are still on track by middle of next year to have made 400,000 EVs from 22, 23 in the first half of 24. But then it just ramps because we've said and we've got the plans in place to reach 1 million EVs in 2025.
That's a big swing.
Huge swing. And this is the year.
Okay. Were you late? Did you miss the boat?
You know, what I would say is we made a decision. We were actually early when you think about the Bolt EV,
truly
affordable EV. And when we started to work on what was going to come after the Bolt EV and EUV, that's when we realized really to do it efficiently and to really be able to scale, we needed a dedicated platform. And so that's why we created Ultium. We also decided we weren't going to do a half step. We weren't going to go to a lot of hybrids because really in a hybrid, your vehicle has two propulsion platforms. You've got the internal combustion engine and the battery. And we made the decision we were going to go to the end game and then making our own batteries. And so we have a plant that's now ramping up very well in Ohio. We have another one in Spring Hill, Tennessee that will ramp up by the end of the year. Another one coming online next year in Michigan. So I think the decision we made to do a dedicated platform and to make our own battery cells, that ramp up has taken a little while.
I'm going to talk platform in a minute, right? Because that's important for what you're trying to do. I do want to talk about affordability, though. You did a conference the other day in which you said it's not possible, really, right now with the technology we have, to make a $30,000, $40,000-ish EV and make money on it. So how are you going to make money? Because that's your job.
Yes. Well, part of it is battery breakthroughs. And as we look at our platform, we have committed with all the ramp up and investment we're doing in 2025, we'll be to single mid-digit levels of profitability.
Right.
And we believe with the work that we're doing on battery technology, and then the fact that we're going to leverage and scale our Ultium platform, as well as making batteries internally, that will give us a lot of advantage to get to profitability at the lower levels. But that's why at this current juncture, IRA is very important.
We'll get to the IRA as well, right? And the infrastructure part of this, because that's huge, because you're depending on a whole lot of other things happening, as are all EV makers. Super quickly on the Ultium platform. It is basically a combination of drivetrain and battery technology, right? And that's what you're betting the ranch on here.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, it is. And what's important about the Ultium is it's scalable, because when we start with a clean sheet of paper and say, what do we want the next Chevrolet Equinox to be? We decide by how many battery cells and modules we put into the vehicle, what the power and performance and range is going to be of that vehicle. And then we can scale it. But what's the beauty of the platform is it's chemistry agnostic. So we can use pouch, we can use prismatic, we can use cylindrical cells. We also have a wireless battery control system that allows it to be much faster to get that vehicle up and running. So we really dedicated the work on Ultium to make it not for today's technology, because the technology is and has to change, but to make it scalable so we don't have to redo the capital as we go forward.
I don't want to get too sideways here, but since you're bringing out all the technical terms about battery science, which is a huge part of what EV makers are trying to do. You're an electrical engineer by training.
Yes.
Does that help you now in this juncture as you try to transform this company?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I haven't done, I'll say, core engineering in a while in my career, but, you know, it always goes back to first principles. And so I think being able to lead the company and really understand, you know, what we're doing from how we design, and I actually had the privilege of leading product development in my career, so really understand how that works. I've had the opportunity to run an assembly plant in my career as well. And having that core knowledge of what it takes to build a vehicle safely, with high quality, and very efficiently is something that I've grown up in the environment and know how to drive the organization to accomplish.
So you have used, in the eight-ish or so minutes we've been talking, you've used the phrase ramp, and to emphasize that you've done the hand going up a ramp signal here. It seems like you're counting on ramping as the savior here, right? You need to scale.
Well, definitely. And that's always been our plan. And again, we know how to do that. But when I look at the strong response that we have to the Lyriq, which I just took delivery of mine the other day and just talked to an employee who was driving a Lyriq and talked about how, you know, it's just a fabulous vehicle. The Silverado.
It's funny that you had to wait, but somebody working for you got theirs first. I'm just saying.
Well, but that's by design too, because, you know, when we're launching a new vehicle, I want those vehicles in the hands of engineers who can ensure that we've designed and met all our goals. And then frankly, for the first customers, the hand raisers, I want them to get their vehicle too. So I've been driving a Bolt EUV for several months before that. Absolutely love it.
So why are you stopping making it?
Because it's our second generation technology. And we're moving Ultium. The difference between our second generation and third generation, which is Ultium, is a 40% reduction in battery costs. And we're leveraging the names of our vehicles that are well understood and known in industry. People, you know, who drive an Equinox today will understand what an Equinox EV, what that delivers to them. But, you know, Bolt is something that has built up a lot of loyalty and equity. Mm-hmm. So can't say more because I don't discuss future product programs. But, you know, it was primarily a move from second generation to third generation, but that's a important vehicle in our portfolio.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, I guess.
So here's something, a tidbit buried in the news this week of the April trade deficit. It got bigger, quite a bit bigger, the trade gap did, as we bought more stuff from overseas in April than we did in March. More cars and car parts, cell phones, household goods as well. That's not good or bad, it's just a fact. The same way my trade gap with my local supermarket goes up when I buy more food because all the kids are home from college. But the share of those imports that we were buying from overseas that came from China went down to the lowest level they've been at since 2006. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab takes stock of how U.S. trade with China has changed.
China is a producing powerhouse of all those ring lights and sweatpants and home gym equipment we desperately craved during the pandemic, a lot of which, remember, got stuck on container ships. Ishwar Prasad is a professor of trade policy at Cornell.
Practically every manufacturer who has relied on lean and mean global supply chains now is much more worried about the resilience of those supply chains.
They want to diversify their suppliers in case of public health crises, natural disasters, and war. Plus, rising tensions with China represent an extra risk.
Manufacturers and retailers don't want to be exposed to the risks that geopolitical tensions with China, or just basic trade tensions, might lead to disruption.
So companies have shifted to Vietnam and Thailand for cheap apparel and footwear, and Mexico for its proximity to the U.S. But Chinese imports aren't going to disappear anytime soon. David Dollar is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
The Chinese have definitely locked up a lot of the lithium supply around the world, and they've got a lot of the patents involved in the production of batteries, so that gives them a leg up in the electric vehicle market.
Meanwhile, China's also been maturing as an economy, shifting its export focus to different and more valuable things, says Susan Aronson, a professor of international affairs at George Washington University.
As countries develop, right, they tend to export more services. And so China had this deliberate plan to move up that value chain.
Yeah, we're importing less from China overall. And yeah, you might not see the words made in China on as many tags these days. But that's partly because you can't sew a label onto software, e-commerce, and AI. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
That's all for today's Flash Briefing. For more news, visit marketplace.org.